Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob, and reading today from the words of John Newton, I'm reading his autobiography entitled Out of the Depths. It has been revised and updated for modern readers by Dennis Hillman. From the Kriegel publication of 2003, we read of John Newton, the author of Amazing Grace. Chapter 12, Seafaring Life. In the interval between my first and second voyage after my marriage, I began to keep a sort of diary, a practice that I've since found of great use. I had in this period repeated proofs of the ingratitude and evil of my heart. A life of ease with my friends and the full satisfaction of my desires did not encourage the progress of grace. And yet upon the whole I gained ground. I became acquainted with books that gave me a further view of Christian doctrine and experience, particularly Scougal's Life of God in the Soul of Man, Hervey's Meditations, and Life of Colonel Gardner. I heard only the common sort of preaching, nor did I benefit from a Christian acquaintance. I was likewise greatly hindered by a cowardly, reserved spirit, for I was afraid of being thought overly scrupulous. Though I could not live without prayer, I did not propose it even to my wife until she herself urged me to. I had little of the zeal and love that seem so suitable in the case of one who has had much forgiven. When the next season called me abroad again, I sailed from Liverpool on a new ship in July 1752. A seafaring life of necessity lacks the benefit of public worship and Christian fellowship. In other respects, however, I do not know any calling that affords a greater advantage to an awakened soul for promoting the life of God in the soul, especially for a person who has the command of a ship. He has the power to restrain gross sin in others and to manage his own time. It was more so in African voyages, since these ships carry a double number of men and officers compared to most other ships. This made my responsibilities very easy, and, except for the occasional bustle of trade on the coast, allowed me leisure time. In these circumstances, one is out of the reach of innumerable temptations, and, if so inclined, has opportunity to observe the wonders of God in the great deeps. The two noblest objects of sight, the expanded sky and the expanded ocean, are continually in view. Incidences of divine providence in answer to prayer occur almost every day. All these help to renew and confirm the life of faith. For a religious sailor, they greatly compensate for the lack of spiritual opportunities that can be enjoyed only upon the shore. Although my knowledge of spiritual things was at this time very small, I sometimes look back with fondness upon these scenes. I never knew sweeter or more frequent hours of divine communion than in my two last voyages to Guinea, when I was almost secluded from company on shipboard or when on shore among the natives. I have wandered through the woods, reflecting on the singular goodness of the Lord to me, in a place where perhaps there was not a person that knew him for 1,000 miles around me. Often on these occasions I have restored the beautiful lines of Propertius to their right owner. They're full of blasphemy and madness when addressed to a creature, but full of comfort and wholesomeness when spoken by a believer. He said, "In desert wood with thee, my God, where human footsteps never trod, how happy could I be? Thou my repose from care, my light, amidst the darkness of the night, in solitude my company." In the course of this voyage, I was wonderfully preserved in the midst of many obvious yet unforeseen dangers. At one time, there was a conspiracy among my own crew to become pirates and take the ship from me. When the plot was nearly ripe and they waited for a convenient opportunity, two of the plotters were taken ill one day. One of them died, and he was the only person I buried while on board. This suspended the affair and led to its discovery. Otherwise, the consequences might have been fatal. The slaves on board were likewise frequently plotting insurrections. Sometimes they were upon the very brink of rioting, but it was always disclosed in due time. When I thought myself most secure, I was suddenly alarmed with danger. And when I almost despaired of life, a sudden deliverance was given to me. At one time, I was at a place called Mana, near Cape Mount, where I had conducted sizable business transactions. I had some debts and accounts to settle, which required my presence on shore, and I intended to go the next morning. I left the ship as I had planned, but when I came near the shore, the surf ran so high that I was afraid to attempt a landing. I had often attempted to land at a worse time, but I felt an inward hindrance and unwillingness I could not explain. The surf furnished an excuse, and after hesitating for about half an hour, I returned to the ship without doing my business. This is something I never did, except for that morning and all the time I was involved in trade. I soon learned the reason for all this. The day before I intended to land, a scandalous and groundless accusation was made against me, by whose instigation I could never learn, that greatly threatened my honor and interest both in Africa and England. It would perhaps, humanly speaking, have threatened my life if I had landed according to my plan. I was very uneasy for a few hours, but I was soon comforted. I heard no more of this accusation until the next voyage, when it was publicly acknowledged to be a malicious slander without the least merit. Such were the vicissitudes and difficulties through which the Lord preserved me. Faith and patience were often exercised, but suitable strength was also given. Since such things did not occur every day, the study of the Latin was renewed and carried on from time to time when business would permit. I was usually very regular in the management of my time. I allotted 8 hours for sleep and meals, 8 hours for exercise and devotion, and 8 hours for my books. And thus, by varying my schedule, the whole day was agreeably filled up, and I seldom found a day too long or an hour to spare. My studies kept me occupied. Otherwise, they were hardly worth the time they cost, since they led me to an admiration of false models and false maxims, an almost unavoidable consequence of admiring classic authors. From the coast, I went to St. Christopher's. Here my idolatrous heart was its own punishment. The letters I expected from Mrs. Newton were by mistake forwarded to Antigua, which had been at first proposed as our port. Since I was certain of her punctuality in writing, if alive, I concluded that by not hearing from her, she was surely dead. This fear affected me more and more. I lost my appetite and felt an incessant pain in my stomach. In about 3 weeks' time, I was under the weight of an imaginary blow. I felt the severe symptoms of that mixture of pride and madness that is commonly called a broken heart. Indeed, I wonder that it is not more common than it appears to be. How often do the potsherds of the earth presume to contend with their Maker? What a wonder if of mercy it is that they are not all broken. However, my lament was not all grief. Conscience had a share. I thought my unfaithfulness to God had deprived me of her, especially my backwardness in speaking of spiritual things, which I could hardly attempt even to her. The thought that I had lost invaluable, irrecoverable opportunities, which both duty and love should have motivated me to make use of, stung me. I thought I would have given the world to know that she was living, so that I might at least fulfill my obligations by writing, even though I was never to see her again. This was a hard lesson, but I hope it did some good. After I had suffered for some weeks, I thought of sending a small vessel to Antigua. I did so, and it brought me several packets. These restored my health and peace and showed me the strong contrast between the Lord's goodness to me and my unbelief and ingratitude toward Him. In August 1753, I returned to Liverpool. My stay at home after that voyage was very short, only 6 weeks. In that time, nothing very memorable occurred. I will therefore continue with an account of my third and last voyage, and that will be the next chapter, that's called Leaving the seafaring life. One end note here about this Propertius that he mentioned, the Latin poet. He was known mainly for his romantic poetry, of which some 4,000 lines in four books have survived. His first book of poems was dedicated to his mistress. Newton paraphrases the pagan poet's thoughts to focus the sentiments upon God, who is the true source of the inspiration that Newton found in solitude and nature. So he converted Propertius for his own purposes. Well, that'll work. All right, next time, chapter 13, Leaving the Safe Seafaring Life. Thank you so much for being here today and listening. Please look around the site. We've got over 3,300 audios featuring some of the church's great preachers, persecution stories from North Korea in English and in Korean, Bible studies on a number of subjects, a blog. If you desire more fellowship, please consider visiting my YouTube channel known as Pastorlands, or buying one of my books at Amazon.com, or contact me at bob.j.faulkner.72@gmail.com, and I'll share details of our local ministry, our Saturday evening Zoom meeting for men, our Tuesday noon meeting for men and women. And this is the Hackberry House of Chosun. This audio is being released on May the 18th, 2022. Lord willing, we'll talk again real soon. Bye-bye.